Right, here we go. We've got a posh business Zoom account now as well, so this doesn't like go off after 40 minutes or whatever it does on the freebie one, so we'll be all right. Right, okay. 3, 2, 1. All right, the Reds, this is the Pro View, the first Pro View since Liverpool were crowned champions of England for the 19th time. Never, ever going to get tired of saying those words. I've got Steve Warnock and Paul Cope, as usual, with me. And yeah, you know, a bit like the last one we did, no particular agenda, because who needs an agenda? We're just going to talk about Liverpool being boss forevermore, I think, and that'll do for me. Steve wanted to start with you, mate, then, because I've heard some of Cope's thoughts already across other Anfield Rap content. Just how did it feel for you, mate? You know, you're a Liverpool fan as well as an ex-Liverpool player. You know, we know through other Pro Views about sort of the bit of a split in your family, red and blues and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, you were always on the red side. So how did it feel after all these years? Liverpool finally did it.
It's surreal, if I'm being honest. It's just because of the way it was all done. And I was working the day that we won it. So I was at Burnley Watford doing that game. And I got a phone call from Five Live. And I was working for Premier League TV doing the game. And Five Live sent me a message saying, can you work tonight if Liverpool win the title? And I hadn't really thought about it that much. And I was like, yeah, sounds. And I didn't actually think Chelsea would get anything out of the game. I thought City, the way they played in the last couple of games, I thought they're going to be too strong and what have you. And then when I came out the game, I got a couple more messages like, can you work tonight if you win the league? And suddenly I started thinking like, it's going to happen this. You know, you just suddenly think this is something's going to happen here. And then obviously when it happened, there was just I just went into work mode, as in, right, I'm going to have to start work now and get used to it. And then you see all the videos coming in of the players celebrating and things like that. But for me, it was done so long ago. It was just almost like the inevitable. And it was like, yeah, it's done. I felt dead relaxed about it, whereas it wasn't like, you think of the way City won it against QPR that year, where United had got their result and they win it in the last minute. It was just like, that must have been an incredible way to win the league. Whereas I think it was just like, I just knew it was done months ago. So it was just like a sort of just waiting for it to happen. But obviously I'm made up, delighted, but like you say, you just knew it was happening anyway.
And from sort of seeing inside the club, albeit at a different time and all the rest of it, I understand that. But from seeing inside the club, though, you know, how people talk about the want for the league and, you know, different managers trying to win the league and hearing maybe what executives and players have said about it and all the rest of it. Because what we always talk about, you know, Cope will back me up on this, is that we've always talked about it feeling like a burden, feeling like something that Liverpool needed to get off their backs type of thing. Was that the type of sense you got when you were at Liverpool, that there was sort of, was there something hanging there about, you know, this long, long wait for a title while Man United, who were, you know, have always been a rival of ours, were hoovering up titles and then getting ahead of us?
Yeah, I think it definitely was. I think when you're that desperate to put your name in the history books of winning the first league title for X amount of years, and obviously the first Premier League title, since it went to the Premier League, you're desperate to win that title and be one of them clubs. But obviously, I look at the players now and every single one of them throughout the squad goes down as a history maker. And not because it was the first in 30 years, but again, because it was the first Premier League title and it was such a big achievement. So there was always that desire to get the league won any time, but there is a huge pressure that comes with it. I think Jurgen Klopp's been very sensible and very clever with not only the players but the media and which the way he's handled that. And I think that's one of the reasons that they've won the league, is because of the way he's handled that pressure. And he takes so much pressure off the team as well, but not in the manner that a Jose Mourinho does. Mourinho's like so obvious the way he takes the pressure off the team, whereas Klopp's very clever and directs the press in certain ways the way he wants to, and you don't often hear them under that much pressure.
What did you make of, I mean, I'm guessing you thought it was a good thing, most of us did, but What did you make as a former professional yourself of the idea that, you know, he made sure they were all together for the moment? You know, he got them at Formby Hall. He'd had this barbecue. He'd let them have a beer. And, you know, we obviously saw the videos, as you mentioned, where, you know, they're counting down those moments until Liverpool are finally champions. I mean, you know, we all talked, didn't we? I think we all thought about, you know, would it be a bit weird? Would the moment be stripped away a little bit by the pandemic situation? But, you know, it strikes me as a simple thing, but also quite a genius thing to have thought that out, to think, you know, we could win it that night and it's going to be fantastic for the boys if they're together at that moment.
Yeah, I think it was the obvious thing to do. It was certainly the thing that I would have expected to happen if I was in the squad. I'd expect him to, because, I mean, you will all remember exactly where we were the moment Liverpool won the league. And we'll all remember, I mean, we're in an unfortunate situation, because usually you would be, we'd all know that that was a possibility that night. And we'd all be round at each other's houses, or we'd be in the pub and there'd be loads going on. And you'd share that occasion. We spoke about it before, where you think of big occasions, big games, and you can always think who you shared that occasion with. It's not necessarily the game on the night or the moment that you won it, but it's who you shared it with, who you hugged on that goal when they scored, when the final whistle went, who were you celebrating with, who did you talk about it after the game, what did you do? So I look at past Liverpool players, and I'm fortunate that I work on LFC TV. So I work with like Gary Gillespie, John Aldridge, who's the other one I was going to say? What the hell? I've lost my way here. Martin Lawrenson, sorry. So when you see them guys and they meet up with ex-players who they've won the league with, the camaraderie they have and the feeling that they have, you can see it in them. Like there's like a bond that no one can break. And it's that type of feeling that these lads are going to look back in 30, 20 years' time when they meet up at Anfield, or they meet at another ground when they're working or doing something. And they'll always remember that night, and it'll always come up in conversation. It'll always get remembered. It'll always be talked about. But the memory will always stay with them forever. So I just think it was the right thing to do. I think it was a simple thing to do, because it's what should have been done. You don't want to sort of win a title and look round and you're in your house on your own, who do we celebrate with here? You've got to be as a team, and it was great. Great to see.
You know, back on the pressure point, Steve, this is something that's only just occurred to me after all the hours we spend talking about this team. Do you think, looking back, and I'm thinking specifically about, you know, the end of the Brendan Rodgers run in 13-14, and you know, after the City game with Gerrard, with the huddle, and you look at that at the time, you're like, yes, that's like Braveheart type stuff. But on reflection, I think that was a sign of just how much emotion was in that from Gerrard, and how much pressure was on him to get this thing over the line. And back in your era, when I think back, there were more lads like that, weren't there? So you, Stevie, Michael, Robbie Fowler, lads who, locals, who knew the weight of the whole club, who'd been brought up with that entire weight. Whereas now, there's probably only Trent, and he's probably young enough that he doesn't really carry that weight with him. Do you think that was a factor back then, that there were more people in the squad who really, really felt that pressure from a deep level?
Yeah, I think definitely was. I think there was, the biggest word you used there is emotion. Emotion's like, it can be one of the greatest tools in football, but it can be one of the worst as well. It's why people get sent off half the time in games, because they're emotionally so wound up with everything that's going on. I think that's a way Klopp's got this, like, he's done it so well in the fact that he gets the players, or he gets the fans, really emotional and geared up to a game. But the players show emotion, but don't get too emotional, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So they've got it perfectly weighted. So when they go into a game, they know what's at stake. They are emotional about it, but they can contain that. And I think, again, that comes from the likes of Lee Richardson, who's the psychologist at the club and sports psychologist who works with the players, is making sure that you get those levels right. And I think there probably was a lot of emotion for the local lads and things like that in back when we were playing. The other thing that I take into account as well is what I've noticed with a lot of the new players who move to the club, they don't live in the city. Now, some people will get offended by that and think, well, why don't they live in the city? But imagine walking around every day hearing we're going to win the league. It's going to be our year. And you don't need that. Take yourself out of the environment. I think a lot of them live sort of Formby, Manchester way, whatever it might be. But they can walk around not knowing, or knowing that they're not going to get hassled all the time from fans saying, like, this is our year. And that's a pressure that builds up that I don't think often fans realise, but they're putting that pressure on the players and that expectancy on them. So I think that's been another, whether it's happened through the want of the manager or the players themselves, but I think that's something that's been sort of critical as well, to not living day in, day out in the city and having that pressure all the time from fans.
Where do you think they might go now, Steve, in terms of, you know, we're all recognising this, you know, what the weight of that 30-year, you know, thing on the shoulders of everyone who's walked through the doors almost at Anfield. Now that it's gone, now that it's lifted, now that Liverpool have won a load of trophies under the Jurgen Klopp and sort of re-established their position, what do you think that'll do before there's loads of lifted this weight? It means they can play with some freedom. Sorry if my internet's shit here, by the way. On the other hand, it might be that, you know, everyone suddenly wants to beat the champions and everyone raises their game because they're playing, you know, a team that's been fantastic in the league for two seasons running. Where do you think, what do you expect to see?
I think teams will be petrified of playing Liverpool now because they look at them as European champions and Premier League champions. Yes, they're going to lose that title of European champions, but they're a force back in Europe, reaching a Champions League final and winning the Champions League in two seasons, then winning the Premier League. Suddenly you turn up at Anfield and you're thinking, this is going to be hard. I think if we hadn't had the pandemic and obviously finances would have been high at the club and they'd have made so much money off the back of winning the Premier League and all the sponsorship endorsements that would have come off the back of it, I think we'd have really gone into the market and tried to strengthen as much as we can. Can we do that now? Not so sure. We're not having fans at the grounds. How's that going to affect the start of next season? Whether we'll have fans in there? Because could you imagine a packed Anfield singing champions, like the Premier League champions? And it's just, you turn up and you hear that as an opposition player and you're thinking, are we getting out of here? Like, if we get out of here at one or two, I'd be delighted. And that's what often I felt when I went to Anfield as a kid, like watching them. You knew how much of a factor the atmosphere played in going to grounds. But there's the other side of it where I look at it and go, Man City, okay, they might have this sort of, this problem with the financial fair play and things like that. But I look at Chelsea, and Chelsea are spending big. They're going for it because they know now they can catch up 2 years' worth of transfer windows in a summer transfer window because other clubs can't afford to buy what they can. Their billionaire owner can. And whether he takes a hit in 2 years and they get slapped with another embargo, but he'll be thinking, I need to get back up there as quick as I can. The only thing that they don't have at the moment, and I think he is going to be brilliant, is the manager, Frank Lampard. You look at Guardiola and you look at Jurgen Klopp. They've done 15 years. Well, Guardiola's probably not done as long, but Klopp's done his apprenticeship at Mainz. Then he's gone to Borussia Dortmund and done his apprenticeship as well, but then got won titles there. So Jurgen Klopp is sort of 10 years, maybe more, ahead of Frank Lampard. But Frank Lampard's going to be a very, very good manager. And he's at the early stages of his managerial career. But Chelsea are going to be a force next year. When you look at their signings and look at the youngsters coming through, they're going to be there or thereabouts. But it's still going to be Liverpool and City for the next couple of years because you know City are always going to improve in what they do. But you can't stand still. You need to buy players. You need to bring fresh faces into the changing room. I know he didn't bring many in this season. He only brought a couple of youngsters in. But even the influence of Adrian coming in at some point in the season, it was another fresh face. It was a voice, an experienced player. So I do think if you want to continue that progression, which he's going for, you have to bring, I think, at least one top addition into the squad to make the players sit up and go, we're not standing still. You need competition for places. You need to push people.
Wanted to get you, Steve, as well on just Liverpool's performance in particular against Crystal Palace, because I know you've been obviously watching all the games. You mentioned there before, you know, the media work you've been doing. you know, there've been varying standards, I would say, off what I've seen. I don't know what you've made of it. What did you think of Liverpool's, you know, it was a real dominant performance against Palace. And it was almost one I thought you could argue from our perspective as fans as saying, you're watching it going, I'm not noticing a discernible difference to there not being a supporter yet. They were playing with that sort of pride and passion that we like to think is us affecting the players. You know, the bit that really got me, I've mentioned already on another show, was just, you know, the 4-0 up and there's three or four of them fighting to win possession off a Crystal Palace player. And, you know, that sort of hunger and drive and desire at that stage of a game that's well won. I just thought that's amazing that in front of, you know, in these circumstances that we'd all been saying could play a huge part.
I think it just shows the mentality of the players as well. I think they come under not criticism, but I think there was a bit of a disappointment at the way they played against Everton and the way the game panned out against Everton. And it was like, don't let this drag out too long. And I think the players almost thought themselves, they were disappointed in the way that they played themselves, and they found it difficult to sort of get used to the environment of different changing rooms, no crowd there. But then getting themselves back at Anfield, I think they realised that if they won that game, they're throwing all the pressure on Man City then to go to Chelsea. And I think that was a psychological thing that they had in their minds was, right, we're going to do this and then we're going to put all the pressure on City. I think you look at the closing down from the players and I think they knew they wanted to put the title to bed as quick as possible and try and get it done. And I think that was in the back of the minds. I think obviously the credit has to go to not only the manager, but the players themselves to be able to run at that intensity when you haven't got the crowd behind you. But from all intents and purposes, like you hear people talk about the training sessions at Melwood and Klopp's relentless. If you stop and you don't do your running, you know about it. So it's drilled into them all the time. So they train like that day in, day out. To get that level into a game in a Premier League game would be very difficult, but if you're training like that constantly, I think back to the time when Jurgen Klopp first came into the club and there was injuries all the time. People were pulling hamstrings. They couldn't cope with the workload that he was throwing at them. Now they must I look back at it and think they must train like that every single day, because if you're running a full pelt every day, you're only going to get fitter, stronger, carrying it on for 90 minutes the way you train. I think he deserves so much credit, not only him, but his medical staff or his sports science staff to get the players to, I mean, it's elite level. You're talking elite athleticism when you're going into a game, and that they're in such great condition. They embarrass other teams the way the actual energy levels that they put into a game.
How do you think, Steve, that'll tie into, and again, this has only just dawned on me, I'm probably just coming out of shock of winning the league. How do you think that'll tie into the rest of the season? Because we're in a really weird position here, I think, going back to what you're saying about transfers. But we've got, is it 7 games left in a very short space of time? I think Klopp was saying the other day, we've got this gap to City, but then we play 6 games in 18 days or something. But something else he's going to be aware of. So you've got the whole idea of we could break all points totals, but there's probably going to be a very short gap between when this season finishes and when next season starts. There's going to be a limit on the type of players you can bring in. And even the players you do bring in, you've got a shorter length of time to bed them in. So where do you think it will lie within the squad itself of we want to get these records versus we don't want to screw ourselves and be knackered for the start of the next season because we want to start that fast as well?
I think it depends on what they did over the lockdown. I don't know too much about it, but I look back at... Look at the forward three, simply, straight away. The amount of football that they play, whether it's African Cup of Nations, Copa America and things like that, they've been given that rest, really, that they've been craving for years, where I look at Mane and Salah especially, and you think, they wouldn't have got that rest if we had gone straight into the African Cup of Nations or whatever. They'd have been going into that in the league. But you look at it and you just think, they played so much football in the summer, just gone. I think Mane had, 10 days off or something like that. Came straight back in, straight into the football after the season off. So I just wonder whether they tried to shut them down for a little bit of time. I often look at Salah not playing against Everton, and I just wonder whether they actually said, give him an extended break. We're going to win the title. We need 2 more wins. Do we have to get him ready bang on the Everton game? Probably not. They might have just thought, we can give him a little bit longer. He needs a bit more of a rest. He's had a few niggles here and there. Let's just get him 100% going into the last five games, six games, whatever it might be. And then we'll shut him down again in the summer. So it depends how the medical staff have handled that. I think when I look at, I mean, you look at Salah when he plays. The other night, he looked like he'd been playing 10, 15 games on the bounce. He looked so sharp, so quick. So I think his physical attributes anyway almost says you can give him an extended period off in the summer and you don't need to train him that much when he comes back anyway. He's such an athlete. He's an absolute beast, isn't he? When you look at the way he's built and how physically strong he is. So again, it depends what the medical staff decide to do on that front. But it won't just be Jurgen Klopp's problem. It'll be the whole league. The whole league won't know how to handle this because they've never done it before. And they'll all have their own ideas. But looking at the way Liverpool played against Crystal Palace, whatever they did in lockdown worked. Okay, you had your sort of your off day against Everton where we weren't quite at the races. But in all fairness, I'd look at it the other way and said, I thought Everton were brilliant on the night from a defensive point of view and the way that they set themselves up. I'd do exactly the same. Ancelotti is a tactical genius, and I thought the way that Everton actually carried the game plan out was brilliant, and it nullified everything that Liverpool were great at, frustrated them on the night. So if you take that game out of the equation, look at Crystal Palace, I actually look at it and go, the medical staff have done an unbelievable job to bring the players back after that period of time, looking like they'd never been away.
Steve, I wondered what you thought about, you know, from, again, looking at that sort of where football's work or football's a profession, if you like, rather than just like, you know, a passion for us as fans, if you like. The reason I'm saying this is because I'm just thinking about, you know, right now we're as fans lapping up absolutely everything about Liverpool, all the think pieces about, you know, the brilliance of Klopp, the brilliance of FSG, the brilliance of Michael Edwards, the players, all of that. And obviously we now go, you know, we loads of cliches that I've heard so many times over the times I've supported Liverpool will now start coming out. You know, you've got to strengthen from a position of strength. We're the champions. We can go out and get whoever we want now. Everyone wants to play for Liverpool. All of those things that always get said. I just wonder from like the just purely the football players community, what do you think what Liverpool have done and what Klopp's done? How will it be talked about in football circles? So will there be, you know, we'd love to imagine, I think, or I'd love to imagine that, you know, all these players are ringing up their agents and saying, get me to Liverpool, I want to be a part of that, I want to play for him, it looks brilliant. Is that realistic? Will Liverpool be being talked in those terms, or is it slightly different when you're actually in that world?
I think they will be getting talked about in that way. I think when you look at what Jurgen Klopp's like, I think you only have to see, I don't want to bring it up too much because I don't think it'll happen, but I look at Mbappe where he says, like, you look at Liverpool this season, he knows about them, he's watching them, he's seeing it. So it does happen. It is one of them where you think, God, I'd love to get to that club, or I'd love to play for that manager, or when you go to a ground and you sample the atmosphere, you think, God, imagine playing there every week. That's what Liverpool have got at the moment. Especially with winning not only the European Cup but then the Premier League, backing it up, people are thinking there's good times happening at Liverpool, and they're a super club now. Again, that's where you've got yourself to. I look at clubs at the moment and you go, you can't get away from the fact, you go Real Madrid, Barcelona, like Liverpool, Man United, they're your super clubs at the moment, where United have still just got that pull because of the name of what they've done over the past. Obviously, they're not. I'd still rather go to Liverpool. If I wasn't a Liverpool fan at the moment, I'd still be knocking on the door of Liverpool. Manchester City, obviously, they've got the pull of Pep. But Liverpool as a package have everything. They have the history. They've got the manager. They've got the ground, the fans. When you think of that, whereas I look at City and I go, they're building a history. They've got a great manager. Atmosphere, don't have it. For me personally, I don't think it's like, it's not a stadium that I'd turn up to. And I have turned up there and gone, God, this is going to be like a cauldron. Mm. Whereas when I turn up at Anfield, I think, God, I'd hate to play here. But like, I've been in the dressing room. I know what it's like to play against it. And it's probably gone 10 times worse since Jurgen Klopp came to the club. I can't remember who comment it was now. I don't know if it was a Southampton player. And he just said, you literally can't breathe when you're in the stadium. You just suffocated straight away. Just get a strangle on you. And you're thinking, how are we getting out here? How are we going to get away from this? So players are obviously within the Premier League are talking about it. But I think that the best players in world football would be thinking, God, I'd love him. I'd be made up if the phone went and it was Jurgen Klopp.
Kofi, you'd like to play for Jurgen Klopp, wouldn't you, lad?
Not fit enough, mate.
Is that the only reason?
That's the only reason. My footballing ability, mate, is through the roof. It's only fitness levels that stop me. It makes me laugh when you see the likes of... I've seen Neville say this, I'm not sure Carragher has, where they mention, and he's like, I made up I was a right-back when I was. Because, I couldn't be a right-back in the modern era playing like this. And because, it's just a different level, isn't it? I think we've reached a point now where all of our dads and sort of granddads' generations would be banging on about all the sports science and all that's a load of nonsense. Like, you can't compare these eras now, can you? Like, the level these lads are running at, that stuff you're saying about being suffocated, something I just dawned on me again as you were talking then. Something we've heard as an excuse for us not being able to sign players over the years. Alexis Sanchez springs to mind. The whole, they don't want to live in Liverpool, they all want to live in London or Manchester. Do you think, being amongst players and listening to those types of conversations, do you think that's only ever an issue when there's also a football issue? Because actually, when we're this good, you're not going to get Kylian Mbappe, for example. If he wants to come and play for Klopp and Liverpool, he's not going to be saying, yeah, but where's my house going to be?
Yeah, it's not happening, is it? I think you just think, I'm moving for the football and I'm moving for that. I think as well, though, like when you see the parade and you see it going through the city and everyone sees them pictures, I'd be thinking, I want to be on that bus if I was a player. I would, no doubt about it. Like even when Paris Saint-Germain won the league and they're all celebrating on the balcony, I was thinking, God, imagine playing for them. Like, that's me personally thinking, love to play for them. I'd love to be in that atmosphere. When Ajax win the league, I look at Ajax and the celebrations they have. I mean, don't get me wrong, Amsterdam's a lovely place, but I wouldn't know where I was going to live or anything like that if I went there. I wouldn't really care. There's going to be nice areas. There's going to be nice places to live. But it's about playing for the fans and playing at the ground and the club and everything that comes with it. You don't think about where you're going to live and what it's going to be like. So, I don't think that's a major issue. I think often players who say, I want to go and live in London I think it's pig-headed in a way, as in the fact of you don't know many other places. You don't know this. You don't know England then. You haven't looked into the culture of the city that you're potentially going to move to. Often, I think it was a problem when Newcastle were trying to sign players and they'd all say, I'm not moving to the northeast. Newcastle's a beautiful place to live. Absolutely incredible place to live. Okay, might be a couple of degrees colder than most other places, but the actual place itself is stunning. There's parts of Newcastle that are great. Why wouldn't you want to go and live there and play your football there? But that's the pig-headed culture of certain players coming over that they don't want to look into that. Or their agents telling them, that's not a nice place to live, that. Well, do you know how many times have you been to Newcastle? How many times have you been to Liverpool? That's just things that need looking at in deeper context from the player who's moving. And that's where I think if you do get a call from certain clubs, you've got to sit up and look at it. And I think that the living sort of arrangements come after it, don't they?
I think the other thing on that, Steve, maybe is that, we talk all the time about it being like a tightly knit group and everyone bought into the culture, again, shown by the videos that we saw and the more giving it beans on the dance floor and Klopp showing off his moves and all the rest of it. Like, you don't get any sense that there's any kind of, factions or dissenting voices or anything like that. It genuinely feels like, for the first time in a long time, that everyone's on the same page. I mean, we knew under Julio that he was divisive as a manager. We knew under Rafa Benitez that he was divisive as a manager. And that was from the outside as fans. You hear things, you see things, you can tell in how the manager talks about certain players and stuff like that. You can see it written on faces. It's there with body language when certain substitutions are made or whatever. And you just don't get a sense that there's any of that at Liverpool. And, you know, while that's brilliant in itself, but it's also brilliant in terms of what you're talking about, because we all know, and you'll be able to tell us as well, that footballers talk to each other. You know, when they go away on international duty or when they're on, when they do media things, whatever it may be, they talk to each other, don't they? And someone might say to someone else, what's it like there? And you get the impression that, you know, all of the players that we've got currently are probably really good salesmen for Liverpool. Because even someone like Shaqiri, who it's not entirely clear what his future will be, it's not entirely clear what's being up with him and maybe why he hasn't had games here and there. It's all slightly mysterious. And yet you see him walking into Melwood the other day and he's like, hey, number one, you know what I mean? And like, he didn't have to do that. Yeah. Some of the players were just walking past the camera and walking in. But, you know, I quite like him. I think he's got some character about him. I love that moment. I just love that moment as a fan because I thought, there's a fella who could easily be pissed off. Mm. And he looks like he's having the time of his life.
I think, so the second part of your question where you said about going away with England, I think that's why Oxlade-Chamberlain signed. I think he was probably questioning people, like probably just trying to say, your manager's like interesting, isn't he? What's he like to work for? Well, he's really trying to be quite cool about it, asking but wanting to know properly. And then when you get the feedback and you hear what they do in training and how he is and things like that, that's probably when you think, God, if there's an opportunity to go there, then the agent, sound the agent out, see if they'd be interested. If I could get there, I wouldn't mind that. And that's what does happen. And it's the other way around as well, where the manager might say, find out if he's happy at this club. Quite like the look of him. I've heard he's available or I've heard there might be a chance. But I don't agree with the other side of what you said, where you said like Rafa and Ulier being sort of like, obviously players annoyed at what's going on in the situation. I've seen Oxlade-Chamberlain come off. I've seen Jordan Henderson come off where they're annoyed. They're pissed off that they're coming off. But what the difference is how the manager handles it and how the players handle it. Now I can imagine people walking off that pitch being pissed off. And Jurgen Klopp looking at them, thinking, who are you to tell me what I'm doing? And I think there's that respect in the changing room that he can walk in after it and say, listen, I took you off for a reason. You should respect that because we've gone and done this, this and this. And it's put to bed straight away. I think often what happens is that a manager will let it simmer and he'll just leave it. And during the week that builds up and it's up and it's up and it's up. Whereas it's dealt with straight away. And there'll be players in the changing room saying, like, why are you coming off pissed off? Have you not got respect for the person that you've just come up, who's come on for you? Why do you think that you're better than him? Well, you're not, because this is a squad. And I think that's the difference within the squad now. It was like, you see Jordan Henderson, Adam Lallana, James Milner, the senior boys who will get that sorted out straight away. And I think they realise what a team is as well as the manager does as well. I think that's why Jordan Henderson's such a great captain for the club, is because he is so selfless in what he does. If there's someone needs telling off, I think he's got that ultimate respect from all the players where they all turn around and go, okay, that's obviously what the manager's trying to implement and get across. And I think we've spoke about it on previous shows where we've said the role of a captain is so important, but only if the other players buy into it. And the players buy into it massively, because I'm sure that Jurgen Klopp, as soon as, if Jordan Henderson says something and someone has a go back, Jurgen Klopp would be the first to turn around and say, who the fuck are you talking to your captain like that? That's your captain. Show some respect. And I think when you've got that manager who says that about you, suddenly the players think, right, not doing that again. We've got to all buy into this together. And I just think that's where your camaraderie comes from as well. It's like there's just a respect for the person who's next to you. There's no, well, I'm better than him. It's not about that within the squad. And I think that's why, man for man, if you looked at Man City, I'd say Man City are arguably, they have more world-class players in their squad than Liverpool and in their first 11. As a team, they're nowhere near Liverpool. And I don't know whether that's something that you see within the changing room or whatever, or on the pitch, but there's something like that Liverpool have got that Manchester City just don't have at all. I see little niggles at each other within Manchester City. When I see niggles within each other at Liverpool, it's like there's a niggle there and it's gone. Whereas at City, I can see it carrying on during the game and there's like little things that happen. So I think that's something, whether, again, the players have looked at it or the manager, but it put to bed straight away.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, in terms of like tripwires that have traditionally sort of seemingly affected team spirit that you traditionally see in football, when these seem to happen at Liverpool, it just doesn't develop into something more. I mean, I don't doubt for a second that as much as we batter away, you know, some of our top players have been spoken to informally by other clubs, and everyone else will have likely, or some, I guess, will have known about that. I think things like that in the past has disrupted team spirit. This time, not so much. And, you know, the moment I love, and I'm not, again, I doubt I'm alone in this, is obviously Burnley, where, you know, Sadio has his little hissy fit with Mo about sort of, you know, passing the ball and all that kind of thing. But, you know, that wasn't allowed to manifest quite clearly. It didn't become a thing. And, no. You know, and you even had Firmino, you know, he probably didn't even think about it. But, you know, the dynamics in the room, if you like, you know, the fact that he straight away makes a joke of it. And, you know, he does his little face, which everyone's now using as a meme still. You know, his little oof, fucking hell, type of thing. But the fact that Bobby does that and all the other players laugh at it, and then Jürgen comes out and says it's nothing, and do you know what I mean? And like, no one tried to put a shell round it all and go, it's nothing. They actually just dealt with it as though it was nothing, and that's it. You know, I don't want to throw Julio under the bus here, but you know, you think about, for instance, what happens with Robbie and the celebration and what Julio says that is, when we all know it was not that, and it had nothing to do with Rigobert's song and all the rest of it. You know, but it was like, you know, Julio then wanted to come out and deflect and bat away, whereas, you know, Jürgen's just sort of gone, yeah, they've had a little falling out, it's fuck all, we'll sort it, don't you worry about it. And then we didn't need to worry, it was sorted, and they clearly still like each other.
Yeah, and I think there's another side to it that I was just thinking about then when we were talking about, when we were both talking about it. You don't hear anything coming out about Liverpool players.
Yeah.
Like, there's never anything in the press, whereas there used to be leaks all over the place. Yeah. There's a real togetherness within the squad that nothing gets out of house. And I am the biggest believer in that. Like, nothing should ever come out. If there's a scrap in the change room, someone has someone up against the wall, if someone said something out of sorts within the change room, it gets dealt with within the change room and no one ever hears about it. You don't tell your mate, and then he passes it on to another mate, and suddenly it's like Chinese whispers, goes around everywhere, and suddenly everyone knows about it. That doesn't happen. That should never, ever happen. I think what used to happen a lot of the time was, there was a little bit of a bust up in training, player gets on the phone, rings his agent, well, you won't believe what happened today. Agent's thinking, great, rings a newspaper, you won't believe what's just happened today at Liverpool, and it gets out, and it's out and about. Yeah. That doesn't happen now. And I think, again, that comes from the respect that the players have for each other, but have for the manager as well. Because if the manager, imagine there's something come out about that. Imagine going to the office with Jürgen. Oh, thanks. I'd be absolutely petrified. But I think as well, I think that comes from the board as well. I think when you've got a board like FSG and they're so, I mean, so business-minded, so clean, I think when they come to the ground, I see the respect that Jürgen has for them and the players have for them. I think it's unbelievable how well respected they are when they come to the ground as well. So I think there's a feeling of, whether FSG have said it or whether Jürgen said it or whether the senior players have said it, you do not let the badge down. And I think that's massively important to not only the club, but the people of the city as well, and the supporters of the club as well, because you are effectively letting the fans down when you let the club down.
Okay. Kofi, any more from you, mate?
No, all fascinating stuff. It just reminds me then of when you were chatting then, Steve. I remember hearing Andy Lonergan, and it's a mad little insight from someone like him who's just brought in as a keeper on the outskirts of the periphery of the squad, and people were obviously into him, trying to get gossip, trying to get dirt, trying to get something. And I just saw an interview with him months ago where he just said, honestly, like, no one believes you when I say this. It's the nicest dressing room I've ever been in, nicest gang of lads I've ever been in. It's properly a, like, closely knit gang. And Klopp made reference to that the other day, didn't he, after the party, where he said to Trent, you give me a list of 5 million players and I'd pick this 25 or 30 to win the league with. Because that's, and it's interesting that, because even when I get carried away with the Mbappe story, the key thing for all of them now is to keep that going, isn't it? You don't want to bring, when you've got a dressing room that finely balanced friendship wise, it's like, you know what it's like in a gang of mates. It's like, can we bring in a new mate? What's he like?
Yeah, yeah.
Is he going to ruin everything else?
I think that's one of the big keys, isn't it? It's like, you're doing your background checks, but you're doing them thoroughly to find out exactly what the type of person is and who you're bringing into the changing room. But it's funny when you mention Lonna's there. I played golf with Lonna's, and I played like with a couple of the other lads in the team. And I said to Lonna's, have you fitted in? And he went, mate, he said, I can't believe how down to earth all the lads are. And he said, the way they looked after me, it's like, I remember sitting there the first day sort of on my own thinking, oh, what do I do here? Who do I speak to? And it was just like, literally, I think he said Andy Robertson come over straight away and was just like, made him feel so comfortable, him and Oxlade-Chamberlain. And he said, and it was just like the best first day at school ever. Do you know one of them where you just think, couldn't have gone any better? But that's the sign of the players as well. And I think that's why players integrate so well. I think the only one who's going to struggle maybe a tiny bit, but he speaks German, is Minamino, just because of the language barrier. But once he gets the language, I think he'll flourish massively, because he's obviously got the quality.
Yeah, it's good times for Liverpool. Made the good times keep on rolling. I think that we'll leave it there. It's been another Pro View. Been a pleasurable Pro View to do. Liverpool, 19 times champions of England, the current reigning champions of the Premier League, of Europe, of the world. Told you, I'm not going to get fucking tired of it.